This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, the robots are coming to class. It's that time of year again. Back to school for teachers and students. Every year on this podcast, we'd like to check in with a teacher to talk about poetry in the classroom. My guest this year is Carol Jago. She has taught English in middle school and high school for over 30 years, and she's the author of With Rigor for All, Meeting Standards for Reading Literature. She joins me from her home outside of Chicago. Hi, Carol.
Hi, good to talk to you, Curtis.
Thanks for doing this. So, Carol, you recently wrote an essay for our website called Agents of Imagination, Science Fiction Poems in the Classroom. And at the beginning of that essay, you show how well-meaning teachers can really get poetry wrong in the classroom. Can you walk us through how that happens?
Well, one of the most common ways that a teacher, I think, inadvertently gets it wrong is to begin by sharing a poem with students, a poem she loves.
Right.
And she reads it with feeling, turns to the class and says, "Students, what do you think?" Silence. Not a word, not a hand. All their eyes are kind of slipping away. But English teachers hate silence. And so what does a teacher do? Begins talking about the poet and the movement to which that poet belonged, and on and on and on.
And onomatopoeia and
exactly.
Rhyme and, yeah, all that sort of stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And kids sit there and go, "Phew, for a minute there, I thought we were going to have to do something." The heartbreaking thing, and really I'm not pointing fingers at anybody else but at myself, who's done this way too many times, is that the bell rings and the students walk out of that room saying, "Mrs. Jago's really smart, and I still don't get poetry." And that's the opposite of what any teacher wants to accomplish. We've got to figure out ways to approach poetry that empowers students, that makes them feel that I can do this. This is good stuff.
So one of the problems that happens in the classroom is a poem is a problem that you have to solve.
Yes.
As if it's code and we have to decipher it to explain it. Where do you think that notion came from in the first place? Why does poetry have to be explained?
Well, I think we instinctively want to put a gold frame around poetry as something precious and the highest level of art and the supreme distillation of language. And in that vein, we create something that students feel excludes them. And my goal for every minute I spend teaching poetry is to say, no, the point of poetry is to include you, to bring you into its world. And I hope to let students see you could actually produce poetry to yourself.
Yeah, I think a lot of poets would agree with exactly that, and that's their intention. They want to include the reader in the poem and bring the reader's responses into any poem that they've written. I want to hear a poem that you have sometimes taught in the classroom, Joey Harjo's Praise the Rain. I want to see if we can pretend that we're in a classroom, you're the teacher, and I and our listeners are the students. How might you teach this poem? What would you begin with?
Well, I'd begin with the poem.
Okay. Let's do it.
All right.
But would you say something about the poem before reading it, or would you just go right into the poem?
I think anything I would say about the poem then predetermines what the students should find in it.
Okay.
And so I think we just want the poem itself. That said, I wish I could channel Joy Harjo to read it, but I'll do my best.
Okay. This is Praise the Rain by Joy Harjo.
Praise the rain, the seagull dive, the curl of plant, the raven talk. Praise the hurt, the house slack, the stand of trees, the dignity. Praise the dark, the moon cradle, the sky fall, the bear sleep. Praise the mist, the warrior name, the earth eclipse, the fired leap. Praise the backwards, upward sky, the baby cry. The spirit food, praise canoe, the fish rush, the hole for frog, the upside down. Praise the day, the cloud cup, the mind flat, forget it all. Praise crazy, praise sad, praise the path on which we're led. Praise the roads on earth and water. Praise the eater and the eaten. Praise beginnings, praise the end. Praise the song and praise the singer. Praise the rain. It brings more rain. Praise the rain. It brings more rain. And now, if you were my students, mm-hmm. I'd say, you know, could you read that poem again to yourself and just jot down or mark a line that strikes you for whatever reason?
Uh-huh.
So, Curtis, what line struck you?
Praise crazy, praise sad. That one struck me because I'm wondering at this point, what is she up to? Why would you praise crazy and why would you praise sad?
And why do you think?
Well, I think because the poem is basically saying embrace life in all its difficulty and its beauty and its horrors and its craziness and its sadness. That's what I think. I think she's trying to be inclusive, but you can't praise the good things without also praising the bad. That's what I took away from the poem. But I've read I've read it several times already. So
yes, that you've made a really important point. The best strategy in the world for helping students comprehend a poem is rereading.
Right.
But good luck sending a group of teenagers home for homework and say, please read this poem 5 times.
Right.
That ain't never going to happen.
Right.
But by giving them the purpose of read the poem and look for a line, it gives them a reason to reread.
Right.
And then notice something that you did,
mm-hmm.
just as, let's say, as my student, that you raised questions yourselves, and by my kind of refusing to answer that question,
right.
but putting it back to you, you come up with something. So do kids. So does an eighth grader. Another thing that I do with this poem is send students back again with a different task and say, you know, could you just circle every time you saw the word praise?
Mm.
And what I'm doing there is to help them be aware of the conscious repetition. It's almost mesmerizing. And then just asking them, so why do you think she keeps doing that? Or another place that just kind of strikes me in the poem is where Joy Harjo talks about the earth, the sky, and then she says, praise canoe.
Mm.
And I would say to students, you know, why do you think she does that? How is it different? Now, I do not know the answer to that question.
No.
And I do not channel Joy Harjo. I do not have a teacher's guide for the poem. But I think that just as human beings, we posit possible answers. And in those positing of ideas, we begin to feel more confident with our own thinking about a poem.
Yeah, I know a little bit about Joy Harjo, and I've actually interviewed her for this program, and so I know that she is a native. I know that she is very interested. She's a Native American. She's very interested in Native American traditions. So canoe, I would read that as kind of fitting into perhaps her tradition.
And see just what you did there, Curtis.
Mm-hmm.
That's where a teacher brings in the background that he or she knows.
Mm.
Instead of front-loading it, you know, as you asked me, would you say anything about Joy Harjo first? No, wait until there's an opportunity when that information matters. Teachers spend our lives giving students information that goes in one ear and out the other,
mm-hmm.
because they have no place to put it. But suddenly, in answer to this praise canoe, almost naming canoe, personifying canoe, then suddenly ideas about the native tradition and indigenous peoples make sense.
Yeah.
And then students want to know more about Joy Harjo. And that way, maybe we can go to your podcast with Joy Harjo and let's listen to her and see what she has to say about her own poetry. So it's organic.
You know, you're making me rethink the podcast a little bit, because one of the things I do on this program is frequently I do front load a poem. I give what I think is some useful information to have about a poem. I often ask poets to introduce their poems and so that we can sort of take it in. And that, part of the reason for that is because listeners don't have the poem necessarily on the page in front of them. They're not right. going to be able to reread it. So I want to give them an idea about what's coming so they can take it in. Because poetry can be very overwhelming. The sheer verbiage coming at you, if you don't know, if you haven't read a poem, it can be quite disheartening to students, I would think.
Absolutely. And I think it's always a double-edged sword. You know, it's walking a tightrope in terms of helping situate a poem. You know, in a poetry reading, as you know, poets often tell a story.
Right.
To give listeners a context. But what teachers do is too often much, much more than just that storytelling, give a context. They actually are telling students what to think about the poem.
Right. Right. I hope I don't do that on this podcast, but I bet I have in the past.
it's hard not to.
Yeah. How do students react to this poem when you've used it in the classroom, Praise the Rain?
They're pretty much confounded by it
uh-huh.
because what they expect from a poem to often is a message.
Right.
What's the message? What's the theme? What's the main idea? And I think purposely, Joy Harjo, again, coming out of a very different tradition than the Western tradition, is conveying what she wants to say in with a very different style and method. And I love that. I love messing with students' minds that way.
Yeah, there's uncertainty in the poem. You don't know quite what she's getting at. I think I got a general feeling from it, but I don't really truly know. How do you get students to become comfortable with the uncertainty of poetry, of not knowing exactly what's going on?
It's more a matter of not doing things that cause them to feel that way, like giving them a quiz on the poem that has multiple choice answers. or think about this. Curtis, the last time you read a poem you loved, did you say to yourself at the end of that poem, gosh, I'd like to write an essay about this?
No, I did not, no.
No. What do? Your first instinct, you know, so I was reading Terence Hayes' American Sonnets for my Past and Future Assassin.
Uh-huh.
And I read one that I love. The first thing I do is go back and reread it.
Hmm.
And the second thing I do is want to read it to somebody else.
Yeah.
Because I want to talk about it. I know I don't understand it all. I want to hear somebody else's point of view. So it's getting students to take chances, to be willing to take interpretive risks with one another's interpretations. And then in that conversation, you start having a sense of people being willing to be wrong, even be dead wrong about a poem, but you've gone out, you've taken a chance.
Mm-hmm. Now, in your essay on our website, you say that science fiction poems are, quote, ideal vehicles for demonstrating the imaginative nature of the genre. Science fiction poems, why is that?
Well, I think that science fiction is one of the genres that we never associate with poetry.
Yeah, that's right.
And yet, right now, issues of artificial intelligence are so much in the forefront of teachers' minds that one of the seeds that I wanted to sow was, as teachers are possibly teaching a unit with articles, essays about, you know, distribution plants and Kiva bots and working with and robotics and maybe reading a science fiction story, that in that bouquet of texts, why not include a poem, that a poem can be a way of almost warming students up to this conversation that will ultimately could be quite argumentative. It stimulates their thinking about the future and about their own roles in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's try out a sci-fi poem. It's by Kyle Dargan, and it's called The Robots Are Coming. Would you read that one for us?
With pleasure. The robots are coming, with clear-cased woofers for heads, no eyes. They see us as a bat sees a mosquito, a fleshy echo, a morsel of sound. You've heard their intergalactic tour buses purring at our stratosphere's curb. They await counterintelligence transmissions from our laptops and our blue teeth. Await word of humanity's critical mass, our ripening. How many times have we dreamed it this way? The age of machines, post-industrial terrors, whose tempered paws, five welded fingers, wrench back our roofs, siderophilic tongues sinking blood, licking the crumbs of us from our beds. Oh, great nation, it won't be pretty. What land will we now barter for our lives? A treaty inked in advance of the metal one's footfall. Give them Gary. Give them Detroit, Pittsburgh, Braddock, those forgotten nurseries of girders and axles. Tell the machines we honor their dead distant cousins. Tell them we tendered those cities to repose out of respect for welded steel's bygone era. Tell them Ford and Carnegie were giant men, that war glazed their palms with gold. Tell them we soft beings mourn manufacturer's death as our own.
That was The Robots Are Coming by Kyle Dargan. That's kind of a scary poem, girl.
I think...
And funny.
And funny. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, and I think that's its genius, that it balances those two with dire warnings. And yet, I have never read that poem with students when there wasn't a funny giggle, a laugh at our blue teeth. It's like everybody hears that double feeling of Bluetooth and then the image of actual blue teeth.
Well, the line I found funny was when he says, "Give them Gary," and I thought, "Poor Gary." You know,
me too.
Some guy named Gary, but he's not meaning, he means the city of Gary, the industrial city of Gary. But that's a funny moment.
And see, I think that. I mean, again, I do not channel Kyle Dargan. I do not know if he intended it, but it's a genius move.
Yeah.
Because in that misreading,
right,
it makes you look closer. And that's what students don't see, that you're a good reader, I'm a good reader. And we still made that misstep because our first default was to assume Gary was the name instead of the city. That's the kind of thing I want to happen with students all the time. Mm-hmm. I also think I often get asked by teachers, "Oh, but where do you find these poems?" I was teaching a unit on artificial intelligence, and I went to the Poetry Foundation and put the word robots in the search engine.
Uh-huh.
I do not have an encyclopedic knowledge of these things, but the thing about the Poetry Foundation is that you can guarantee it's going to be a poem of quality that you're going to find instead of just go out on a Google search and, you know, come up with Cookie's webpage and things like this. And so, I mean, there are tools, there are places to go where teachers can really find the kinds of materials that students deserve.
Well, that was quite a plug. That was unexpected, and your check is on the way, Carol.
Oh my God! Are you kidding? Everywhere I go and work with teachers, I make sure I take them to the Poetry Foundation website.
Now, back to the poem for a second. There's a word in there that threw me for
siderophilic.
Yes, I had to look that up because I didn't.
I did too. Know
what that means, and it means, as I learned, having an affinity for iron. And in other words, within the context of the poem, the robots like our blood because it tastes like iron. Is it fun for kids to encounter a new word, or high school students to encounter a new word, or are they turned off by that sort of thing?
I think that it is a perfect example of the kind of word detectives we want students to be.
Hmm.
Too often, again, siderophilic would be something that a teacher would front load. Now, in order to understand this poem, here's siderophilic, and I want you to look it up in the dictionary and write a meaning-laden sentence with it. No, forget it. But on your second reading, come back and say, "You know, guys, I don't know what siderophilic means either. Let's look it up together." And do you see what a different tack that is for working with students about words? There is no Princeton Hot 100, Hot 1000, Hot 10,000 words that you need to learn. The English language is a vocabulary that I'm going to be learning my whole life long.
Yeah.
And that's what I want students to feel and enjoy. And then be happy that they know a new word.
Yeah, it's I think in professing ignorance of something as from the teacher, it's got to be powerful for students.
I think it is. And that goes to the whole idea of a poem, that I do not know what this poem means.
Right.
I have a sense of it, and I'm happy to talk about what my sense of it is, but there is no, this is the main idea, this is the theme. I mean, I'll bet Kyle Dargan would be hesitant to answer those questions.
So you've been teaching a long time poetry in the classroom. Over the years, do you think the teaching of poetry has changed for the better?
Well, I think there are a lot of people, teachers, and in the poetry community, people trying to make it better. I had the very good fortune when I was a first-year teacher of having poetry in the schools come out to my classroom in Santa Monica, California. And, of course, nobody else wanted to do this. Me, I'm a new teacher. I don't know how to get through Friday. This was four Fridays in a row that somebody else was going to teach the class. Yahoo! But I sat in the back and I learned things that I never, all of my background as an English major, never taught me in terms of an approach and an ease, having fun with poetry that then really informed me. I think what's going on with spoken word poetry, spoken word clubs at high schools and middle schools, the Poetry Out Loud initiative, all of these things are working towards what we'd like to see. But there are also things working against what we'd like to see, which is whenever we put a poem on a high-stakes test and ask kids multiple-choice questions about it. It absolutely works against everything we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, I wonder if that word siderophilic is going to be on the SATs this year.
Well, they're trying to get away from rarely used words, but it is that kind of word.
Carol, thanks so much. It's been fun talking with you.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you, Curtis.
Carol Jago's article is up on our website. It's called Agents of Imagination, Science Fiction Poems in the Classroom. If you're an educator, there are tons of resources for teaching poetry on our website. Click on Learn and then on Educators to see what's there. We love getting emails with your comments and suggestions. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.